Hello, everybody. You're listening to POP, Prevention on Point. My name is Brian, and hello, Tara.
Hey, good morning, Brian. I know this is on in the afternoon, but we are pre-recording this show, so I think we're going to continue our discussion on trauma today.
It's just such an enormous subject.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with that realization of trauma-informed care and people starting to understand traumas throughout your life cycle, that it has come to the forefront, I think, in mental health treatment, in human reality and substance use treatment, that this is important to have knowledge and skills just as a human being in this area. When you discussed that there was so much material when we recorded last time that we could have two shows on this, I thought about when we had the presentation from Mahaney's, which is the Mental Health Association in New York State. And they were talking about mental health first aid and trainings that people can take around mental health first aid. And the person who was there speaking to us said that the training gave her the ability to talk to somebody in her family. It wasn't used professionally. You know what I mean? It was used with an uncle for her. And he talked about some traumas that he had and how it created other traumas in their family. And it was such a beautiful story. You don't have to be a person in the human services field at all, mental health field, substance use, first responder, to have education and information around being trauma informed.
Mental health first aid. I don't know how many people out there know about this. To me, it's exciting because it's training a civilian workforce or whatever.
Exactly.
In these basic skills and acknowledging that, yeah, they can even be essential in your family, in your relationship.
Your everyday life.
Everyday life.
Mm-hmm. There are words that are thrown around in our world, you know, like active listening and motivational interviewing. These don't have to be techniques that are used in a mental health or substance use field or in human services. I mean, this is how I truly believe that we should be talking to each other naturally. If you are a caring, compassionate, and empathetic person, that active listening is important for any social supports or friendships, or like you said, family. Just having those conversations and being able to be present and listen can assist anybody through a trauma or after a trauma or even just life.
We talked a little bit last time about how one of the very most critical parts of providing support for someone who's going through trauma, being there for them, is just simply, like you said, actively listening. And
yeah,
everybody thinks
there.
They have to do something or give some kind of advice.
Or bring food.
Or, oh, yeah.
I mean, isn't that the natural reaction for humans? If there's a trauma event or maybe a loss of a human life, we bring food.
Yeah, we bring some kind of hopefully home-cooked food.
Yeah, which of course, nurturing the soul and the body are very important. But, you know, sometimes just being present, right? Yeah, listening is more than anything.
So yeah, you mentioned this term motivational interviewing, which, you know, before I worked in this field of human services, I have to admit, I didn't even know what it meant. It just sounded intriguing. What are some of the, maybe we can talk a little bit about how some of these skills figure in. Like, so there's active listening. The other first one that I think of is what they call affirmations, where you're remembering to give positive feedback to people and be encouraging as people are telling you things. People, they don't just want to be listened to. People want some acknowledgement.
And to be heard.
To be validated, to be heard.
Yeah.
And for you to echo things back to them.
Right. When you talk about friendships, or if you were to question somebody about some of the best conversations that they've had, whether it is a supportive conversation or maybe an intellectual conversation or a debate conversation, those are all active listening, you know, and I don't think people realize that they're actually participating in this active listening, because if you are able to recall something back and say, did I hear you say, do I understand you correctly? I heard you say a few minutes ago. And then state what that person said. I mean, just as a human being in a relationship with another human being, whatever that relationship is, it's nice to feel validated that somebody heard you. And maybe they don't understand what you're saying. So asking those questions, being that active listener, an active participant in a conversation, I think is just good skill. as a human being. And those techniques are especially important with trauma because, again, like we talked about in our last show 2 weeks ago, how important it is to recognize that your trauma is yours and my trauma is mine. So to really sit and listen to somebody and understand where they're coming from is so important because you may not see that event as traumatic, but if they do, then that is what's important. I think that's really something that was important to me to talk about today because sometimes I don't want these techniques or ideas that we're bringing forth in the show to be lost on people that may be listening. Just because you may or may not work in the human services field doesn't mean that these skills and these ideas aren't important, because they are. They're important if you're a human being walking on this planet, I feel. And, you know, with social media and internet and texting, we've lost a lot of our social skills. And this is just a reminder. And there are beautiful free trainings everywhere over the internet. And there are, of course, some in person as well, you know, that can hone in on these techniques and ideas. And again, it doesn't have to be for the professional. And I just thought that was a beautiful story from that training that we had, presentation from Mahaney's.
When I think about the different support groups that anyone can join out there that are free on Zoom or in person or hybrid, that's another way that you can both share your story and also at the same time get a certain amount of training and experience in these techniques. There's a group agreement.
There's
a group agreement
that
we're all going to listen and nobody's going to hog the conversation.
Right.
Anyway, so that's another element of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, these are the building blocks, because I know today we wanted to talk about different techniques to deal with trauma and traumatic situations, but there's so many other things like before that too for people to realize. And I think speaking is another thing. You know, of course, we're always talking about the person who is available for an individual who has had a traumatic experience. But we also have to remember the person that has had the trauma and how difficult it must be to tell that story and to tell that truth and to retell it. When we think of victims of any crimes, they're often retelling their story a million times, not just to friends and family, but to law enforcement, maybe the court system, maybe social services, maybe a trial happens. And so having the ability to tell that story is also important. And then being able to tell that story and be okay mentally and physically with that trauma, I think is also a skill that has to be learned for people.
We try to keep track on the show of the things that seem to come up over and over again naturally. And you just mentioned another one of those, the awareness that anyone who's reaching out for help or it needs to finally convey to somebody that they have some trauma, or perhaps there's some abuse going on, or perhaps there's some substance abuse. Anything that's really unsavory, difficult to share, we have to remember first and foremost, this person it's a huge act of courage for them to be sharing to begin with. So handle with care.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. You know, we've talked about it with, you know, walking in and getting help for a substance use disorder, walking and getting help for mental health. You know, walking in and discussing a trauma. These are all monumental experiences for the person who is walking in the door and saying, help.
Right.
Also, you know, because these topics are so sensitive and have been for such a long time and people weren't forthright in discussing them, stuffing them away was quite normal. I mean, you and I happen to be the same age, so I think our generation and growing up through the 80s, right, in the late 70s and 80s, that things weren't discussed. So it wasn't abnormal to not discuss them. That was the norm, you know. So then to do it through your adulthood, there's also repercussions for that, right? But we have to be patient with ourselves and tolerant with ourselves and realize that there are other ways to get through things in the moment and in that place, especially, you know, when we look around the world at horrific things that are happening, that might be the only way people are surviving at this point in time. They do keep us alive in traumatic and in horrendous situations.
There's this term you're talking about, what I think of as the fine line between being able to shake something off and then just tucking things away and not addressing them at all.
Yes.
I grew up in the Midwest, you know, two generations away from Depression era farmers.
Correct.
Where yeah. it was a virtue to tuck things away.
Yeah.
And there are these terms now out there. I think of the term snowflake. And yeah. in the male world, oh man, you do not want to be a snowflake. You do not want to be perceived as being really delicate. You don't want to ask people
to have
for
feelings
special
and emotions.
Treatment.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, you don't want to talk about something that might re-traumatize you. You don't want to be talking about that. Yeah, on the tried and true techniques that anyone can learn that have been proven to work. You mentioned earlier Mahaney's, and I want to make sure people know about that and the mental
yes,
health
great
first
idea.
Aid stuff. So at Mahaney's, MHANYS.org, and that stands for the Mental Health Association
of
New York State.
That's correct. And they have a lot of resources, not just for individuals, but for businesses and companies. They come out and do multiple trainings in May, which was, you know, Mental Health and Substance Use Prevention Month. They actually had some free trainings as well. So they're a wonderful resource. There's some local people here from Greene County that Katie Oldakowski, who helps run all these trainings throughout our area and the state. So
and I understand
it's a great
this is
resource.
Someone that's Greene County's own, but
Greene County
but
own.
She is involved deep in the whole statewide
yes.
effort, right?
Yep.
That's really cool.
We might have to contact her.
Oh, that'd be great to get her on. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so you can, you know, train yourself that way, but there's other things that, you know, you can do personally, or you can help, you know, somebody that might be going through a trauma. You know, often we see people have, you know, anxiety attacks. Sometimes people disassociate. Sometimes people have a depressive episode, you know, and these are techniques you can use for yourself, or you can help somebody else to do as well. I know that just sometimes they seem a little cheesy. They seem so simple. And it doesn't seem that something would actually help, but they really do if you just concentrate on them. Rushing through any of the techniques, of course, is not going to help anybody. One I like to work with people on is tapping, and there's multiple different kinds of tapping.
So like counting?
I tend to do it with counting when I teach people, or I use it myself. I've also seen occupational therapists use tapping when people are overstimulated to help calm our parasympathetic nervous system, and that tapping then is body-wide. I just use a small technique with counting where we touch our finger to our pinky finger, our thumb to our pinky finger, our thumb to our ring finger, our thumb to our middle finger, and our thumb to our index finger. And with each finger, you start at 5 and count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Switch the finger 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and keep going. And as you finish with the 5s on each finger, then go to 4, then go to 3, go to 2, and go to 1.
So it just gives you something to focus on.
Focus on, and you will feel a calmness come over you. Your breathing will slow down. It's just because you are concentrating. It's a rhythmic motion. You know, it's a rhythmic count. A lot of times, you know, when we look at different religions throughout the world, we often hear of chants or prayers or songs or any kind of musical symbolism that each religion has. And when you listen to them, they're repetitive. It's like a mantra. And that is why these things work. That is why prayers and mantras and all of these things that we do see in different religions across the entire world work, because those are also calming techniques as well. So if you are a religious person, you may want to turn to something that is within your religion, that is a short saying, maybe a song or a hymn or a prayer, sometimes repeating that a few times. And sitting in those words can also be really important. I know the last episode we talked about music. Mm-hmm. We had some Yo-Yo Ma at the end of the episode, you know, to listen to. That song, as soon as I hear that, which, by the way, great choice for Yo-Yo.
Oh, yeah. That song, we played the Bach cello suite, yes. The first one. Yeah.
You know, that song itself is one of my favorites because it has those long, drawn out periods. It has just a calming tendency for me. Another thing is a lot of breathing techniques. Again, one of those things we hear a lot about. But, you know, taking long, deep breaths, holding our breaths for 5 seconds, making sure that we're breathing in through our nose and out through our mouth.
Do you remember what there is one where you count a certain amount of times when you're breathing in. You yep. hold your breath for a certain amount of seconds,
yep.
and you breathe out for a certain amount of seconds.
Yeah. So that's actually a technique from what I've read. Again, I can be wrong. Please let me know, of course. Is something that our military service members do. And it's, again, something to calm our parasympathetic system. That when you take a deep breath in and you hold it for 30 seconds and then you release it for 30 seconds, it's shown to calm the parasympathetic system. It's also giving you something to concentrate on because now you're counting again.
Yeah. A lot of times we just need something to focus on.
Yeah. Distract from that voice in your head and the hamster on the wheel that's perseverating over whatever it's perseverating over, right?
Yeah. The technique that I mentioned is called the 4-7-8 technique.
Okay.
Inhale for 4 seconds. Hold your breath for 7 seconds, and then exhale for 8 seconds. I've always thought that's interesting that I know in meditation they talk about this too, that people don't focus as much on how important it is to exhale thoroughly, thoroughly breathe back out.
Yeah, it's something we don't think about really is exhaling. Yeah. You know, that's similar, that 4-7-8 is similar to box breathing. So if you think of a box or a square, 4 seconds for each side of the box. So then you do it 4 times. You know, you're
That almost seems more practical. All you have to remember is one number. Inhale for 4, hold for 4, exhale for 4, hold for 4.
Yes.
Over and over again.
And that's the box breathing technique.
Oh,
so,
that's great. I'm going to try that.
So with the kids, we also do pizza breathing. So if there are anybody out there who is working with younger humans, that, you know, pizza breathing, you know, how do we hold a pizza, you know, and have them actually thinking about holding a piece of pizza and what do we do to our pizza, right, before we take a bite of it because it's too hot. So we have to breathe on it, but we don't want our pepperoni to fall off of it. So we got to think about that and take a nice deep breath in and blow on our pizza to cool it off. And just having, you know, cute little ways to incorporate these things for our little humans is really fun, too.
I'm totally going to try that on my niece. Yeah, so you've been listening to Prevention on Point, WGXC, ACRA, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported, radio for open ears. We talk about wellness, health, prevention topics, and hopefully offer real information and education and conversation. We do it twice a month. My name is Brian.
And I'm Tara. And yeah, we're hoping to serve those here in Greene and Columbia County and give you as much information and education as we can around prevention points.
Yeah, always feel free to reach out. We're always interested to hear from you. One of the things that we like to do is share songs and anything that might be related to wellness. It's my turn this week to share something on our subject of trauma. And this is kind of a heavy song, maybe for anyone who has dealt with abuse. This is a song called Cold Blooded Old Times by Bill Callahan, released in 1999. And I don't actually want to interpret it too much. Anyway, it's the very first song that I thought of, a song that I think is authentically about trauma.
Okay. Great.
So here we go. This is Cold Blooded Old Times by Bill Callahan. Used to go by Smog.
Cold Blooded Old Times. Cold Blooded Old Times. Cold Blooded Old Times. The type of memory that turn your bones to glass, turn your bones to glass. mother came rushing in. She said we didn't see a thing. We said we didn't see a thing. And father left at 8, nearly splintering the gate. Cold-blooded old times. Cold-blooded old times. Cold-blooded old times. Cold-blooded old times. The type of memories that turn your bones to glass. Turn your bones to glass. And though you were just a little squirrel, you understood every word. And in this way, they gave you clarity, a cold-blooded clarity. Cold-blooded old times. Cold-blooded old times. Cold-blooded old times. Now how can I stand and laugh with the man who redefined your body? Now how can I stand and laugh with the man who redefined your body? In those cold-blooded old times. Cold-blooded old times. Cold-blooded old times.
Got a little over 4 minutes left, and we wanted to use the rest of the time to play a bit from a series called The Science of Trauma by Axion Aid, which is an organization that was created in the wake of Hurricane Florence to give agencies and communities free resources, both pre and post-crisis. In part one here, we hear from Dr. Erica Sally and Dr. Brenda Tillman about the importance of knowing your Achilles heel, as they call it, and recognizing your personal triggers.
Hello, I'm Dr. Erica Sally, Doctor of Physical Therapy with Readiness Group.
And I'm Dr. Brenda Tillman. I'm a licensed clinician in Texas. I'm an EMDR solution-focused therapist. So the first tool in the resiliency toolkit is something we call know your Achilles heel. What we know about trauma is there are no two people that experience trauma in the same way, and that there are no two people who are going to go through it and handle it in the same way. So determining your Achilles heel is something that is very, you really have to look at yourself and ask, what is it that when I respond to something or a certain response or a certain thing that I've experienced that is going to cause me to have more challenge associated with with working it through and being able to figure out, you know, what do I do with this information and how do I not get it to the point where it actually leads me down the road to something more challenging later.
Personalization is a huge factor when it comes to trauma. Oftentimes when we experience an event or a situation that is something we can personalize to our own lives, whether it's responding to a child, a situation, a pediatric situation with a child the same age as a child that we may have at home, or a situation that we've been through in our past that reminds us of that situation. So it's really important. That recognition piece is really the first key step in processing through trauma. You've got to understand how it affects you and why it affects you so that you can do something about it.
So when that's the case, if we are aware of what we're impacted by and what are our triggers, then what we can do is address that and be able to get that plate clear in a way that gives us the resilience we need to go through and enjoy life and find that joy in the future.
Recognition of triggers is really fundamental when it comes to processing through trauma. Most of the time when you ask a first responder, how are you doing? The answer is going to be good. I'm fine, right? I'm handling this great. And so what happens is we end up kind of pushing those situations to the side and stuffing them down and not recognizing the impact that they had on our lives, which then makes it kind of start to bottle up to a point that it may end up negatively impacting us down the road. So it's really important. That recognition piece is really the first key step in processing through trauma. You've got to understand how it affects you and why it affects you so that you can do something about it.
The other thing that you might watch is that chemical experience, because the body responds in kind. When you go into fight or flight, when you go into that red zone, it's a wonderful way to be able to say to yourself, okay, that one might be something that I might need to walk through. Mm-hmm. That one might be something that I need to call and walk through with my person, or even go back to the station or go back to the hospital and talk through with the team that you just experienced that with. Because there's nobody that is a better asset for you than somebody who has walked through an event like that with you. They've mm-hmm. all, and they may not have had the exact same experience, but I guarantee you they are experiencing like things, and the ability to walk through that kind of fills in the puzzle piece process and gives you the opportunity then to think that everyone else is experiencing the same type of things that I'm going through.
And then the third is knowing what to do about it. And that really is key, because when you don't know how it affects you and what to do about it, that's when you often want to run from it. So being knowledgeable and educating yourself on how these traumas might affect you and what your strategy is that works for you to mitigate the effects of those traumas is really key in processing through them.
I just want to end that also with the fact that everybody seems to think when they're going through challenging times that they're the only ones going through that. And recognize, it's really important for us to recognize that we all go through challenging times in our lives. Now what we need to do is see what works for us, because it's going to be different for everyone. Now you get to determine, how do I build that resiliency and some of that upstream stuff, prepare myself, and then what do I do when I really need to turn and address some of the challenges that life throws my way?
All right. Well, I know it's been a hot minute since we've had somebody on the show, our last guest. You know, it's hard to follow Bobby Hoyt. So,
yeah. And we actually even have had someone on.
Yeah.
But we keep working on the edit of it.
Yeah. You know, we're new programmers here on WGXC. So we're learning as each episode is put out to all of you. So, yeah, we have a few guests lined up. JP Cahill is coming in from Columbia County. He's a dual diagnosis coordinator for Columbia County Mental Health. So we're going to be having a conversation with him. And then we also have Claire Cousins, who's going to be showing up in a few weeks as well. She's going to come to us from the Columbia Green Addiction Coalition. She is the assistant director, and let us know some things that they're also offering in the Twin County region.
Cool. Yeah, really excited about that, Tara. So yeah, hey, take good care, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.